why is it that we can't learn this larger lesson to stop believing that there's only one truth? Could you please address for us, and take whatever time you need, the idea that we as a society, with all of our so-called intellect and all of our advanced education, we are so susceptible to the most primal and some of the most fundamental issues that we make our motions from insecurity rather than a complete consciousness?
Yes, Gary, I would love to. I think the first thing to clarify here is the fundamental problem. The fundamental problem, I think, is one of worldview. We have gradually been lulled into believing that everything is matter. Everything is made of matter. It may sound like a philosophical question, but once you start believing it, then you don't believe in the rest of the human condition anymore. What you are suggesting with all these different all these different angles is precisely a point problem of worldview, because if the worldview is material, it excludes the spiritual, it excludes all the holistic elements, including vital energy or meaningful mind, values, etc. So what happens then is that you are left with only a chemical body, and then it makes sense to talk about sugar moderation, all these ideas, or it makes sense to not take a multicultural point of view, because, of course, it's all matter, and whatever you talk about is fairly meaningless because there is no meaning in the world. And this is the worldview that we have bought into for the last 60 years. It's a lot of conditioning that has gone on in the society. So nothing will change very fast. But people like you, people like me, have been talking out, and many others, as you point out, there are really millions of people who are ready to think this new way. And it is a holistic way. We have to bring back our whole human condition in the discussion. When you do that, automatically it will be multicultural, because it is very clear that we have the gross material body, about which we know a lot because it's easy to study, and scientists have done a good job on this, a fair job, I should say, not perfect, certainly. But the subtle, our vital energy body especially, the body that Rupert Sheldrake has given a biological name, consisting of morphogenetic field, this is the body that goes behind the constitution of our organs. Organs perform biological functions, but they cannot be formed but just by the genes. That's a completely false claim by biologists who cannot back it up. There is no biological materialist theory of morphogenesis, how organs are formed from the basic molecules. Rupert Sheldrake's theory gives a foundation to this, and this also agrees with what ancient people have known all along, spiritual traditions, that we have chakras in our body where we feel our feelings. Why do we feel feelings at the chakras? Because there are organs in those chakras, and those organs are representations of this morphogenetic fields. That's what consciousness uses to make this organs in a new view. So when you include this movement of the morphogenetic fields, which I'll just refer to as vital energy to make it simple, because that's what we feel, then you recognize that the basic component of all these so-called nutrition specialists that is missing, they don't know ditty about vital energy. Their whole education is based on materialism, scientific materialism, the theory that everything is just chemical and physical, nothing else. There is nothing to biology except chemistry and physics. No. Biology has two, well, not only two, actually, it's more, but immediately pressing things, which is consciousness itself and, of course, vital energy. Biology without vital energy is unthinkable. So when we miss this vital component, what happens is that gradually the nutritional aspects will be missing. The vital and the physical gets gradually detached. In extreme cases, we have the example of chronic fatigue syndrome, where people feel constantly a sort of a pain. Not sort of a pain, it's real pain, but it's really a detachment of the vital and the physical. That's what is causing the pain. So we are not getting the food that is processed. That processing changes the vital energy component of the food. These vital energies are missing from processed food. Vital energies are missing for anything that is refined, like refined sugar you were complaining about. Sugar is a major problem because it's too much refined. With that kind of refinement, the vital energy just gets disassociated. So what happens then is that when we eat anything with this kind of stuff, this kind of refined sugar, then it does not satisfy. And it is that not satisfaction that gives us more craving, and therefore we eat even more. And this is a common phenomenon. Everybody knows it. What is moderation when we cannot control the natural body reaction of needing more because we are not getting the vital energies associated with what is supposed to give us? If people could just be educated to moderate, but with non-refined sweetness, such non-refined sweetness is certainly available as molasses and other ingredients, but that's not what is used in making food, sugary foods, and this is the basic problem with it.
Let me ask a different question here. You pose the question, there is no substantial scientific evidence to support the truths of spirituality. Therefore, what are we doing about it? And I take that to refer to our modern culture of reductionist ideology. So answer this question, please. What are we doing about all the scientific evidence that supports not only spirituality and consciousness studies, but also the many other discoveries that are not accepted yet by our leaders and the ruling official scientific elite?
Well, not only not accepted, Gary, the difficult thing is that it's a tactic that is being used, which is called benign neglect. You just ignore the fact that there is new data. You just go on with your ways because you have many people who are not particularly careful about everything that goes on the internet, or, you know, the media is under total, except people like you really look at. The media is in the worst condition that it has ever been. You know, to think of America where, we talk about freedom of expression, freedom of speech so much that we allow even dirty pornography without any hesitation, but we don't allow any dirty talk about our science, I mean, quote-unquote dirty talk, meaning that any maverick talk, any paradigm shift, media will immediately shun it, but media will publish reports of pornography anytime. So, this is a sad reflection on the society because pornography is allowed by scientific materialism, which actually tells quite openly that our sexuality is like that. It is uncontrollable, etc. We have brain circuits, so we cannot change and all this stuff, and we openly flaunt it. And as you know, I vote Democrat, but Republicans have a very good point against the liberal media because it does not value values. And so we live in a very topsy-turvy world where we are forced to choose sides, whereas there is no sides. And as you know, because of the depolarization in the society today between people who want values but only under the umbrella of religion and people who are materialist scientists who don't like any values at all because scientific materialism doesn't make any room for values, so we have a real problem, a real difficult situation.
This is why I
suggest quantum activism. Okay, all have to take charge, and I'm with you in that completely.
Okay, I'm going to ask you in a moment to go into this in depth, of how we become quantum activists, especially in light of most people confusing primarily in the context of our ego-centered subjective observer of the world and ourselves with it being consciousness, which it is not. So I'd like for you to talk about that. But let me mention, we're coming up to the end of our land-based interview. My guest, if you would like to read his latest book, God Is Not Dead, is Professor Amit, A-M-I-T, Goswami, G-O-S-W-A-M-I. For those of you who want to continue listening, you can listen over the telephone by calling 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. Now, would you address the following? most of the people, at least that I speak to, confuse mind, primarily in the context of our observing the world and ourselves, and we call that consciousness. So explain the difference, and when we do know that we are acting from a higher consciousness rather than from a lower ego, since most of what we do day-to-day is ego-based, and a lot of that's based upon our fear and insecurity, or the need to align ourselves, even as reporters align themselves. Embedded reporters in a war zone will never tell you the suffering of the people we're attacking. They will never make them human. They will never put a human face on them because we deal in black and whites and absolutes. You're with us or you're our enemy. If you're our enemy, then you deserve no respect, no sympathy, no compassion. If you're with us, then God's on your side and everything is right. We deal in this childish infantilism. In every aspect of our lives, every institution has betrayed us with this infantilism, and yet how often are we afraid to become activists, afraid to take a quantum leap because of the fear or the blowback that someone in an official position will say, ah, you're challenging us, bad idea, we control the keys to everything, you don't. You want to be a good doctor? You don't look at non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. You want to be a good teacher? Don't challenge the curriculum or how it's taught. You want to, and so it goes. Please answer this. Take your time.
Yes, I would love to, because this is first of all, it is a question of a couple of difficult concepts that have been around. First of all, consciousness. What is consciousness? Consciousness, by definition, from the etymology itself, suggests that it has to do something with knowledge. So to know, consciousness is the facility with which we know. As soon as it becomes clear that with which we know, then there is also clear that consciousness has a subjectivity. It's about I knowing that you are talking about. In fact, if you look at the etymological origin, then you also know that it's I know with. To consciousness comes from a Latin word scire, which means to know with. So it not only suggests that I, but it also suggests that there is a overall connectivity, we, lurking behind. This is the consciousness, the subtler consciousness, the higher consciousness that you are talking about. Then there is the ego, a personal, very individualized, and then there is this collective, we. This is what consciousness is about. Now, what is so interesting today is that quantum physics has exactly this very picture of consciousness, that indeed there are two levels of consciousness. One is the conditioned level, but beyond that, there is this connected, interconnectedness that we have. And it is from that consciousness that we have the very basic definitional aspect of consciousness, namely the free will, freedom to choose. Consciousness has freedom to choose, but it's not at the level of the conditioned ego. Ego is based on the environmental, etc., genetic and all that conditioning, so it has very little choice only among conditioned alternatives. At the most, ego can say no to conditioning. That's as far as it goes. Beyond that, ego has no freedom. But the freedom is there for us if we can lift ourselves, elevate ourselves to this higher consciousness. It is literally a kind of a lift. It's a quantum leap. So the adjective higher goes very well. It's higher also because it's cosmic. It's objective consciousness. And that's where our choice. Quantum physics says that everything in the world is possibility, including our thoughts, our feelings. And we choose out of these possibilities. Notice the power of this thinking, Gary. Because as soon as it is clear that we choose, immediately it's also clear that we have to take responsibility for it. And this is the component that misses. When we divide between I and you, when we divide between either or and miss the other side completely, we make the other side as enemy. But of course, that is just not the whole story. That is the story from the ego side. But the story from the holistic side, this collective consciousness, is completely different. Then we have to take responsibility for whatever is going on in humanity itself. Now, coming back to mind, so if you take this view, then it turns out that consciousness is everything. Consciousness is the ground of being. So what is mind within that consciousness? This consciousness has many facilities to do its work. What is its work? Work is to know. know what? Know the possibilities that have not been manifest yet. So choice manifests the possibilities, gives us the manifest world. How many kinds of manifest world are there? Well, just look at how many experiences we have. We have experiences of sensing, that's the material world. That one we know very well. But then we also have experience of thinking, that's the mental world. So mind is that facility which gives consciousness the ability to think. And so think what? Think meaning. So mind processes meaning, possibilities of meaning. We choose among these possibilities when we choose new meaning. We, of course, are creative. And when we are choosing old meanings according to our conditioning, then we are acting in the conditioned ego. In the same way, consciousness has two other very important compartments. One is the vital energy that I was talking about earlier. From that, we get feeling. And then the very elevated one, that's Sri Aurobindo has called it supramental. Plato has called it the archetypal world. That's the world of values, like truth, beauty, justice, love, goodness. All that comes from that world. So we have four kinds of experiences, four kinds of worlds within the holism of consciousness. And that's the way quantum physics allows us to look at ourselves. Now, other philosophers have thought this way, and this is the most comprehensive way of thinking about mind and consciousness and what's the difference between the two. I hope I have answered your question adequately.
You've answered it beautifully, and I thank you for that. Just my own closing thought on this. Right now, we can all, I believe, agree that our culture, our global human community, nature, the oceans, land, and skies are in serious danger of spiraling into a state we might think of as chaos, a breakdown leading to randomness. Nature does not care about our political affiliations and the different policies enacted. It doesn't care about the particular religions that we subscribe to. It doesn't care about what we own and the size of our stock portfolios. Rather, it responds to the conditions present in a neutral manner according to a particular universal laws of nature. Given that humans are a part of that web of natural quantum laws, our molecules in our body act the same as in other life forms down to a bacterium. This should tell us a lot about our true relationship to the planet and the universe, and to stop for a moment and ask, are we just continuing today with a mentality confined to reductionist mechanistic thinking and acting as a major contributor to the degradation we're witnessing, or will we change the nature of our relationships into one that is driven by a higher consciousness? You are certainly helping guide us in that direction, and I thank you profoundly for your input.
You're welcome, Gary.
Professor Amit Goswami. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.